Joining me now is Rebecca Walzer. Walzerwealth.com is her website, walzerwealth.com. I sent today a brand new article. In fact, I think it might be here over at worldviewreport.com. I think I put it up there. Maybe I didn't put it up here. I thought I did. It was a great article over at the Brownstone. I'll have to go grab it real quick for you because it's all about, in fact, let me go over there. Let me go over to the Brownstone Institute. Here we go. You go over there. Here it is right here. The Great Taking. The Great Taking exposes the financial endgame. This just came out January 7th. One of the very best exposés of the covert, well-hidden attempts to rob all of humanity, barring the minuscule number of psychotic individuals compromising the inimical opposition of their material possessions and their immaterial freedom. It was published fairly recently. It is accurately titled The Great Taking 2023 and was written by David Webb, one of the most courageous and finance-savvy authors I've ever come across. He introduces the book on page one in uncompromising terms. What is this book about? It's about the taking of collateral, all of it. The end game of this globally synchronous debt accumulation super cycle. This is being executed by long-planned intelligent design, the audacity and scope of which is difficult for the mind to encompass. Included are all financial assets, all money on deposit at banks, all stocks and bonds, hence all underlying property of all public corporations, including all inventories, plant and equipment, land, mineral deposits, inventions, and intellectual property, privately owned, personal and real property financed with any amount of debt will be similarly taken, as well as the assets of privately owned businesses which have been financed with debt. If even partially successful, this will be the greatest conquest and subjugation in world history. We are now living within a hybrid war conducted almost entirely by deception and thus designed to achieve war aims with little energy input. It is a war of conquest directed not against other nation states, but against all of humanity, end quote. Somewhere in here, I think he tells the story. Yeah, look at this. Look at this. This is writing in his book. Less than a month after speaking at a conference in the U.S., a man contacted me who asked to meet in Stockholm. He had been the chairman of a U.S. political party and had a long career related to the defense establishment. He stayed at a hotel within a short walking distance from my apartment. We had lunch. He suggested a pint of ale. He asked me to explain the subject of which I had spoken at the conference. I went through the evidence and implications. The odd thing is that he then asked no questions about the subject. Instead, he fixed me in the eye and said, "Does your family know you're doing this?" He said nothing more. That was the end of the meeting. I paid the bill and left. Perhaps it had been a, quote, courtesy call, end quote. We all have to die sometime. And being assassinated must be among the most honorable ways to do it. One must have been doing something right, made a difference. No classier way to die, really. I always wanted to be like John Lennon. Wow. Joining me now is Rebecca Walzer. Rebecca, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Brandon. Glad to be here.
This guy apparently got under someone's skin. I mean, can you imagine making a presentation like that and not one question other than, is your family aware of what you're doing?
I mean, obviously, he's probably talking to somebody who's aware of the plan. Why would you ask that question, right? If you're not aware, involved somehow.
What do you make of what he says on page one about all assets? He does say privately owned, personal, and real property financed with any amount of debt. What if people are listening tonight and they say, well, thank the Lord, I've worked for years to get my house paid off, so maybe I won't be at risk. Will people who have their homes paid off be at risk since they have no debt tied to it as far as the banks go?
I mean, I haven't gotten a chance yet to read David Webb's book. It just is obviously fresh off the presses, and so I don't exactly understand what his mechanism that he is going to assert is the reason for all of this. But what I am surmising from the contextual development around the book is that what he's talking about is when you have debt involved, there's a couple of provisions. So there's a couple of themes So the debt itself usually has a call provision. Okay, Brandon, so your mortgage has a callable, usually it's some kind of callable, there is something for it can be called. That could just be as simple as you're not making your payments, and so they're going to call the note. They call it through a legal process called foreclosure. They go to the courthouse and basically say, he's not honoring the note, we're going to take the collateral back. So it's a foreclosure of a note, but it's still one of the reparations you can get if someone is not actually executing the debt. But I think that the premise generally behind his book is what we've been talking about on your show for at least over a year now. And that is that when you have fiat currency, when you literally take your money supply that's at a low level because your currency is valuable and you don't have to create a lot of it to buy things because, again, it's valuable. And it goes from that to we don't even have 1 cent left in our original dollar. We're negative 16 cents into our original US dollar in 2023. So when you have what we call fiat currency, which is based on or tethered to no real hard asset, and you take that fiat currency beyond what the United States had lived within for, you know, their entire history up and until 2001, and I really will even say as late as 2008, we had really, even though we were getting bad and we didn't show as much fiscal constraint as we should have in the last simply 25 years, we really still did not cross the threshold over to the insanity level that we're at now until 2008. And that was when we literally switched from what we would call just, you know, regular economic theory to what we call modern monetary policy, or MMT. And I can just explain this very simply to your audience, Brandon, by just explaining the Fed's balance sheet. The Federal Reserve had a balance sheet. They owned assets or had liabilities of $1 trillion less since inception. And it stayed like that all the way until 2000, the dot-com. And then it went from $1 trillion to $2 trillion. It doubled in a matter of about 3 years. By the time we got to 2004, we stayed at $2 trillion. We stayed at $2 trillion all the way till 2008. And this is where you can really see everything go crazy and take off. In 2008, we doubled again to $4 trillion. We stayed at $4 trillion from 2008 all the way basically to 2020, at which point we doubled again and went to $8 trillion. So literally in the matter of 20 years, we 8x'd our Fed's balance sheet, and it is not ending. In fact, it is now at that speed as a matter of course. On November 1st, the Treasury, Janet Yellen, announced they were going to have to sell $1.6 trillion in paper between now, between November 1st and the end of Q1. So in just 5 months, they were going to have to finance $1.6 trillion. And this is not during a pandemic. And this is, even though we have the Ukraine going on and we have obviously the Middle East going on, this is not technically in a time that the U.S. is involved in an actual fully declared global war. Obviously, we're helping Ukraine immensely, and that is definitely a purse issue and a you know, arms issue. But Brandon, this is the level that we are spending now. So when you have that kind of debt-based system that has no relationship now to the true value of your hard assets, what happens? People can't buy things with just cash. They have to finance, and they finance everything. And when you finance everything and you don't own it free and clear and a debt-based system and the bills can be called, they can basically say, you must give us our collateral back or you must pay off your loan. Well, you can't pay off your loan because, first of all, there isn't true value of the residual assets. Try to refinance a car, you know, when we're not in the middle of used cars going up because of some interest rate issue or some shortage. But, you know, usually people are upside down in their car because it depreciates faster than you actually pay off your mortgage or your car note. So when you're in a debt-based system that has no relationship to true hard asset values in the world, then that system collapses when the economic policies of expansion and easy money and constant pumping money into the economy from the Federal Reserve ends. And that's the point that we're at. The Federal Reserve's balance sheet is over, it's close to $8 trillion. And if we were to end in a crisis tomorrow, Brandon, what is the Federal Reserve going to do to help us? They've already priced into this market that we have right now 6 rate cuts for this year, even though the Fed's dot plot only shows 3. The market has already priced in 6.
So what does that mean for the average person watching tonight? 6 cuts coming in 2024, and when will these cuts start?
Well, there was some prognostication that we would get our first cut as fast as this month, and whoever said that doesn't understand that that's not even possible. We don't have an FOMC meeting this month, and so if we were to get a rate cut in January, that would be an emergency Federal Reserve meeting, and that would be an emergency measure. So January is out, barring some black swan event that certainly, Brandon, could happen tomorrow. I mean, I am absolutely expecting a massive economic situation in 2024 or 2023 or 2022 because we are at the end.
So now we're out of 2022 and 2023, the only option is 2024, right?
We are at the end of this system. And I can tell you, and you know, I was in Fox on Friday morning when we had the jobs numbers come out, and you know, everyone has priced in. It was kind of like you're in a twilight zone because last year when we had bad economic news, literally live in real time, the market reacted positively to the bad economic news because it knew that the Federal Reserve was going to be doing something about it. You know, oh, well, we got inflation cooling. So now the Fed isn't going to hike as much because inflation is cooling. So now stocks are taking off to the races and to the green, you know. It's just lost. It's not lost on it. It shouldn't be lost on the American public. How absolutely atrocious it is to follow a stock market that is that reliant on central bank policy. And the fact that it's that tied to it and that in live real time, we get good economic data and the market can come down because they think the Fed is going to interact with that data in a way they don't want. We get bad economic data and the market shoots to the moon and to the green immediately because they think, oh, the Fed's going to be more accommodative. The market loves modern monetary theory as long as it hasn't yet collapsed. As long as we're still in that point of stimulus, stimulus, stimulus until collapse, the market loves it.
So let's talk about debt. Here's an article saying, according to data from the St. Louis Fed, U.S. banks lost $359.32 billion in deposits between December of 2022 and December of 2023. And then they go to the chart and show you where they're getting this information from. What does this mean to you that there's so much liquidity being taken out of the banks? Who's taking it out? Is it going for living expenses? Are they not trusting the banks, or they're just paying off their house or paying cash for a car, or what are they doing? Apparently something's going on. Where's the money going?
Yeah, there's a couple of factors that are happening there. So the first factor, I'd say at the beginning of 2023, you know, Brandon, as well as I do, that we had a true banking liquidity crisis. So what happens as the Federal Reserve starts to tighten interest rates and becomes tighter, and they were doing what we call QT, quantitative tightening, that means that they're putting less funds into the actual system to circulate. And what happens is that naturally the banks aren't lending, because what's happening is the banks are buying, you know, the short-term rates that are higher, but they are collateralizing on medium to longer term. So they are actually not getting a positive net interest spread, which is how they make money. So what happens automatically when the Federal Reserve turns to tighter monetary policy, banks immediately, and there's multiple Federal Reserve charts we could show this, but banks immediately start to tighten their lending standards. And the second they tighten their lending standards, what happens is you have corporations that have to go into their actual cash reserves and start using their liquid cash to finance operations because they're no longer, it could be medium-sized banks. You know, we're not talking necessarily Fortune 100, but we're talking about the engine of the economy is the small and medium-sized businesses, and certainly the regional banks, which were the ones where the liquidity crisis was the greatest, Absolutely tightened lending standards in Q1. So you had less lending going on, you had more cash reserves being used, and that's on the corporate side. You had the exact same thing happening on the retail consumer side, you and me. You know, a lot of people finance a lot of their life with credit cards. Well, as the Federal Reserve tightened interest rates and there was less stimulus and less liquidity in the system, there's less money that banks can lend out in the form of credit card, you know, balances. And so people had credit card balances, or the interest rate on their credit card balances was going up. So their minimum payment went up astronomically. And Brandon, they could no longer add another $200, $300 a month as they were before. So you had a true liquidity crunch tightening all around at the very, 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 very beginning of the year. Then, of course, we got through that only through fake Federal Reserve involvement again, opening up a new credit facility called the Bank Term Funding Program. And we know that that is projected to rise up to $2 trillion, but it's supposed to close out this March. There's no way it's closing out this March, because we now see once again in the same quarter of the next year that the bank liquidity is once again tightening. And it looks like we could have the exact same thing happen again this year. Then what I will say, Brandon, is once we got to really serious economic news that they could no longer kind of subterfuge and obfuscate for the American public, then you started to see the Federal Reserve starting to talk about rate pivot or pausing. So then we got a bunch of pauses. Our last hike was July 6, 2023. July 26 was our last hike. So then we got pause. The market started to like that. The bullish investors that believe in Fed policy started to say, hey, we're going to start to see some cuts soon. And then, of course, as we all know, the Fed did come out and say, we are going to go back to accommodative policy and we're going to start cutting. So the market likes that. And what did we have at the end of November and on, mid-November and on? We had a tech bull run for our Magnificent Seven that made the entire year on the S&P 500 really good, even though that's 28% of the market, the Mag 7, and the rest of the market did abysmally, 2% or less, and some sectors negative.
That's not even keeping up with inflation.
That's what I'm saying. The broad market did horribly. The only winners was the Magnificent 7, and the Magnificent 7 did so well because these are Fortune 100 companies that have a lot of runway because of AI, Brandon. I mean, we're just talking all about the impact of AI on these next couple of years, and investors are buying this up because they see that the growth is going to be there because of AI.
Well, that's interesting you brought up AI, because that's where I was going next. How concerned are you that our enemies, China, Iran, North Korea, could use artificial intelligence to carry out a financial crisis in America?
Well, I got to tell you, the technology is already here. So I don't know if you saw this or not, Brandon, but Joe Rogan actually had a deep fake podcast that was created, I want to say, in 2022. I believe it was not even last year. It was in 2022. And it was so realistic that that they had to, it was obviously taken down, put back up, taken down. They had to put disclaimers all over because the technology group that put that deep fake forward was trying to make people aware that this is how accurate this I mean, this is an entire dialogue and podcast from a very well, the number one podcaster in America, and nobody could tell it was a deep fake.
So all you got to do is get a deep fake where you got Biden saying something, the Fed chairman, the treasurer, you know, a few key people saying the wrong things, and watch what happens to the market, and before you could pull it back, right?
I mean, you know, Brandon, that, I mean, look what happened in Miami in the last 10 days. I mean, you know, it was the largest police response in the history of the city. They shut down the airports. They shut off the power to 30% of the homes. And, you know, if you listen to what was being reported to the police, I mean, there are technological capabilities, specifically I'm talking about here Project Bluebeam, that can, you know, make people see things that are not, they're not actually seeing. The ability of this hologramic technology And this is, I switched gears. I mean, the deep fake is something, is a computer program, but I'm now talking about beyond the computer program, their ability to project it into real life.
It almost sounds like War of the Worlds. Remember when War of the Worlds went over radio before television? Everybody's freaking out about an alien invasion. Yes. But now they have the technology to simulate things in the air, to simulate things on the ground, to make people think they're seeing something that they're not actually seeing. It's actually manufactured, whether it's what you're talking about or artificial intelligence. And again, when your economy is running on nothing but consumer confidence, because it's not backed by gold anymore, as you know, and it's really not even backed by black gold. I mean, as we're starting to see the ditching of the U.S. dollar as a world reserve petro currency, which brings me to the BRICS. But it wouldn't take much for the consumer confidence to be able to start panicking. And clearly we got a problem. Here's one headline right here. Americans are racking up more phantom debt. Why is that a problem? Over the holidays, the use of buy now, pay later loans hit an all-time high. Because the lenders generally don't report to the major credit reporting companies, it's hard to know exactly how much of this debt is currently out there. The loans can also be hard for consumers to keep track of, which can lead to debt problems, experts say. And then we have here it is. Here's the graphic, BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China. Of course, they've added in Saudi Arabia, Iran. And now here we got this G7 and BRICS member countries as of January 4th, 2023. But things are moving very quickly here in January 2024 with this new BRICS system growing, which, of course, is a war on the American dollar.
Admittedly so. They admit that it is a war on the U.S. dollar. And, you know, I mean, I love America. I'm so loyal to this country. But I think that we are going to have a global change over here, Brandon. And I think that we have to learn some lessons. We have to eat some humble pie. And we have to acknowledge that we lost our way, that not only did we switch to monetary theory that is just completely unsustainable and can never truly represent true asset values with modern monetary theory and a fiat currency, but we also weaponized our currency when it's supposed to be the global currency reserve. And we decide we don't like how one country acted towards another country, so we kick them out of the SWIFT payment system, i.e. Russia, Ukraine. You know, that sends a message that if you ever get on the wrong side of the United States, you could find all of your.
So why not band together and start an alternative so you can't be bullied?
And so what I'm saying is this, there's a global change coming. It is not stoppable. It is on its way. And that's okay. Because it's going to result ultimately in you know, us tethering back to hard asset values. You know, the BRICS nations, the one thing that this multipolarity is going to pull us into is backing our currency again with actual precious metals, because we know that Russia, China, and India have said they are going to back their global shared reserve with precious metals, specifically gold. China's the largest miner of gold in the world. And rare earth minerals. They're the largest, houser of rare earth minerals. So we know they're going to be backing their currency.
So we're going to have to do something too, because nobody's going to want to hold our,
that's exactly correct.
We will be worthless, worthless paper dollars when you can go over here and buy something that's actually representing something legit. What about though the great taking? Are they going to try to tokenize all of our mortgages and land and minerals? I had a guy on here the other day from Utah who's running for governor. He's in the state. He was a county commissioner, then a state representative. He's running for governor in Utah. And he's talking about how the federal government's coming in there and stealing the land in Utah before the minerals. And of course, they're selling the minerals in some cases with Uranium-1 to Russia. But they want to take these and then put this into the tokenization and the spreadsheet and say, you know, which is really ironic. I wish I could go back into my radio show, because years ago, I said on my radio show, years ago, before I knew about any of this stuff, I said, if your dollar collapses or is going to collapse, what are you going to back it by? Well, maybe there's not enough gold to do this. What if you start backing with hard assets? So the federal government starts stealing land from the states in order to back your currency with timber and land and mineral. And I was just talking out loud years ago on my radio show. I wish I could go back and find that, because I even said also people will, when you go to the grocery store or the store and buy something, and every time that thing goes by that, the symbol, UPC symbol, boop, boop, I said, what if you were charged a tax based on the carbon footprint it took to manufacture that? Now, this was years ago that I was saying that. And I said, and what it would do is get people to think about Mother Earth and pantheism and all is God and pantheism. God is in all, as they teach. And I was just talking off the top of my head that if I were these guys, and I wish I could go back through the thousands of interview radio shows I have and find where I'm talking about this, because this was over 10 plus years ago. I was saying, just talking out loud. Well, here we are. The federal government is buying up land, or stealing it, I should say, from the states, which I think fits into them wanting to put all of this into this tokenization program, that, like the Great Taking.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly the point of this book is, you know, debt finance societies, you know, you're going to have every single asset class reduced to tokens, and it will all be on a global world ledger. And this goes right along with us renting forever and becoming serfs, Brandon, and having a feudal system in modern era. The feuds and the landlords, if you will, are the people that will be the 2 billion humans that will decide everything, that will run everything, and the rest of us will literally own nothing. We will rent everything. We will have to work to earn our universal basic income, at which point X amount, 40% to 60% to 80%, will automatically go to all of our subscriptions to cover our health care, to cover our room and board, to cover our renting of our electricity, the light rental, the car rental, the radio rental, because it's a subscription. Everything is subscription-based.
Even you might even have to rent your refrigerator, because they make
everything
them so cheaply they'll fall apart, and then the next plan will only be, we don't sell them now, we only rent them now.
That's it. Because think about this. Think about your iPhone, okay? If you don't have an iPhone, think of Spotify, Pandora. My iPhone, I have had iTunes since iTunes came out. I have a personal library of over 500 songs that I have purchased, bought. And every single time I go into my iTunes on my iPhone, what does Apple do to me? They keep trying to present that buy Apple Music. Even though I have 500 songs that I have bought and that are there that I can listen to whenever I want and create my playlist within my 500 songs, every time Apple makes it so difficult for me to access my paid for music because it's trying to get me to buy a subscription to rent my music for the rest of my life.
I'll even go further. How about when the phones stop working and they don't update your software and you go to the store and they're like, oh yeah, they don't update that because your phone is 5 or 6 years old. I'm trying to be frugal. And they say, oh, I'm sorry, we don't support that phone anymore. You have to buy a new one now. What are you kidding me? It's $1,000 phone. Well, there's nothing wrong with it. I know, but we don't support it and update software. You got to buy a new one.
Yeah. I mean, they made $6 billion the first year they tethered, they disconnected their wall charger from their phone box. They made an additional $6 billion in selling chargers. Everything, Brandon, to the last digit is going to be rented, and every asset is going to be digitized through tokens on a global world ledger. Now, these are the plans that they want. These are the globalization to government and economic plans that they want. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, at least not yet. This is the eventual end of, I think, all things that
in the meantime,
as
the music starts, put it up there. If you'd like to consult with her company, you need to have a net worth of $250,000 or more, walzerwealth.com. You can see she knows the landscape here, folks. I hate to say it, but most of your financial planners have no clue what I just said, or what she just said. They have no clue. I'm friends with some of them. I'm like, hey, you heard of FedNow? What? You know, the bankers that go into the bank. My banker, you heard of FedNow? What? So if you want a financial planner who's actually up on what's happening, check it out, walzerwealth.com. You do have to have a net worth of $250,000 or more because she has requirements under her licenses that require to work with people that are qualified accordingly. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Brandon. Great to see you.
You too, my friend. And check out my website here, folks. Look at it, worldviewtube.com. Everything we do is put up there for you to watch later, free of charge, worldviewtube.com. May God save America. Take care.